afterlife, where the trouble and strife have a glorious hope to give. Cheer on, the waste, and my toil will be yours, and a rest on that shore where the night has been turned into day. Out in the beautiful paradise valley, by the side of the river of life, out in the valley, the wonderful valley, we'll be free from all pain and all sin and all strife. There we shall live in the rose-tinted garden, meet the shade of the evergreen tree. How long for the paradise, paradise valley, where the beauty of heaven, of heaven, of sea. Though your garden is rare, it is not to compare with the flowers that bloom in the garden above. In the midst of it grows cherry's perfect sweet rose, 'tis a wonderful flower we know. Up in the beautiful paradise valley, by the side of the river of life. Up in the valley, the wonderful valley, we'll be free from all pain, all sin and all strife. There we shall live in the rose-tinted garden, meet the shade.
Welcome to another Bible lesson brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 14, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. The Apostle Paul has just before this verse said that there's a way to escape from temptation that God will make for you. Then he says, flee from idolatry, and the way to escape from idolatry is simply to flee from it. Do not participate in it. Do not have to be a participant in idolatry. That's recognizing any kind of a God other than the true and living God. We invite you to join us today in our Bible study.
I believe the strength upon this grip is that the treasures of journey to a place where there is love on every hand. I'll exchange a land of heartaches for a land of pleasure. I'm campy, for Canaan's happy land. Yes, I reach the land of promise with the things of glory. My journey in being in a place so lovely and so grand. I'll be led by Jesus to that blessed land of story. I'm camping toward Canaan's happy land. Every day I'm camping toward the land of Canaan. And the treasure I'll survey, its wondrous beauty spread.
Oh, be
glory, hallelujah.
I will find
the land of promise, for I'm camping toward Canaan's happy land. Every day I'm camping toward the land of Canaan. And the treasure I'll survey, its wondrous beauty spread. Oh, glory, hallelujah.
I will
find the land of promise, for I'm camping toward Canaan's happy
land. As we continue our study in the 29th chapter of Genesis, we're ready to begin at the 20th verse. The setting for this passage is that Jacob has now gone to Mesopotamia, to the city of Haran, which is the place where his mother Rebekah's brother lived, and his name was Laban. And when he got there, he was able to meet up pretty soon with Rachel. And as soon as Laban, Rachel's father, heard that Jacob was there, he ran to meet him. And he kissed him and brought him into his house. And verse 14 says, And Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. Now, we'd like to comment just for a moment on this statement about thou art my bone and my flesh. This is truly a scientific recognition of the fact that Jacob was genetically kin to Laban and his family. No doubt, he had physical characteristics that looked very much like those of Laban. Both Isaac and Rebekah were close relatives of Laban, and their son, of course, would be like him as well. And so it was obvious by looking at Jacob's physical characteristic that he was kin to this family. And Laban said, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. Now here's a statement in the Bible that truly is scientific in nature. It's not just some kind of a figurative statement, but it is literally true that Jacob was of the same bone and flesh that Laban was. And the Bible states that very plainly. Jacob had a twofold mission by coming to Haran. He first of all was here to escape the wrath of his brother Esau, who threatened to kill him because he took the birthright and the blessing. But he also had come to seek a wife from folks who believed like his mother and father believed, from folks who believed in the true and living God, and not get a Canaanite woman. And so he fell in love with Rachel, and he was working for Laban. So he made an arrangement with Laban. Verse 18 says, And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. So he agreed to work for 7 years so he could marry Rachel. Now Rachel was the younger daughter. She had an older sister named Leah, but it was Rachel that he wanted. And so in verse 19, Laban said, It's better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. So this was a real good thing for Laban also. He wanted her to have a good husband. He liked Jacob. They were kin, but the kinship was not so close they couldn't marry. And so that was the arrangement. Verse 20 says, And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and it seemed to him but a few days for the love he had for her. So he enjoyed this time. He got to be with Rachel all this time. He was working there on the place, and he had the time go by pretty fast. So he gladly served the 7 years for Rachel, and he eagerly and joyfully looked forward to the time when he could have her for his wife. And this anticipation made the time pass quickly. He knew this was the woman God had chosen for him, and that she would fulfill every requirement to be the mother of the nation God had promised. And furthermore, he loved her very deeply. So everything was going the way Jacob wanted to go. He had the right woman. He was working towards acquiring her to be his wife. And this would set him on the correct path toward being the patriarch who would fulfill the promised line on through his generation. And furthermore, he loved Rachel very deeply. And we have to believe that Rachel loved him back the same way. So a marriage here like this that's been ordained by God, which will necessarily have the genuine love of a husband and a wife in such a marriage, this is surely among the greatest joys available to God's people in this life, a marriage just like Jacob and Rachel are headed to have. But when the time was up, when he worked for the 7 years, Laban seemed not to notice it. No doubt Laban was reluctant to face the prospect of losing Jacob's services after his marriage, so he said nothing. And Jacob finally had to remind him that he had kept his part of the agreement, and now he wanted to take his bride. Verse 21 says, And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. He was wanting to consummate the marriage now. He had fulfilled all of his part of the contract. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. So Laban decided, okay, we're going to go ahead and have the marriage. So all the arrangements are made for the wedding. The feast has been made. It's no doubt a gala occasion. But Laban has devised a very crooked scheme. He has devised a scheme that's designed to fraud Jacob in a terrible, terrible way. What he has decided to do is to substitute Leah, his oldest daughter, for Rachel on the wedding night. Then, technically, Jacob would be married to Leah and before he realized what had happened, which is something Jacob didn't want to do. And this would mean that he could get another 7-year period of free service from Jacob. When Jacob worked longer to get Rachel, and he would also solve the problem of not having a husband for Leah. So he got his oldest daughter married, and at the same time got another 7 years' work from Jacob while he worked again for Rachel. And he probably felt reasonably certain that, knowing how honorable Jacob's character was, that he would not cast out Leah once he'd gone into her, once the marriage had been consummated. And if Jacob should actually refuse to work for another 7 years, as he would demand, then at the worst, it would be not too difficult to find another husband for Rachel. So Jacob was going to lose all the way around. Even if Jacob decided to elope with Rachel, which was something that was practically unheard of in the custom of that land, Laban would still not have lost anything. So it was worth a try, and he did it. It was a custom to have a great festive week after a wedding, beginning with a banquet on the night of the marriage, with many guests invited, most of them being male guests. At the proper time, when the wedding formalities had been observed, Laban presented his daughter to Jacob as his wife. And verse 23 says, "And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her." No doubt, Leah had a veil on, and Jacob could not truly identify her, but Jacob trusted that this was an honorable occasion. He never questioned that it was really Rachel. Never questioned it might be another woman here. These two sisters, Leah and Rachel, were probably very much alike in stature and in general body characteristics. They might have even had a very similar tone of voice and spoke with the same type of an accent. And so the deception might not have been that hard to accomplish on somebody who was unsuspecting like Jacob. It was an exciting time. They were both virgins. He wasn't familiar with her in a sexual sense anyway. Whichever woman he had would have been a strange woman in that relationship to him. And so when he took her into his room and into his bed, it was dark. And no doubt much of the conversation was in whispers or in brief words of love. Probably also Leah had taken Rachel's clothing and perfumes. And it was not until the morning that Jacob actually saw that he'd been grievously and very unfairly deceived. He had been actually robbed, you might say, by Laban. And verse 24 says, "And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah his maid for a handmaid." Verse 25 says, "And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, What is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me?" So, in the morning, Jacob made the discovery. It was Leah. It wasn't Rachel at all that he married, but Leah. And so he proceeded to approach Laban on the matter. And he asked him, "What have you done to me? Didn't I serve you the full time? Didn't I make my part of the bargain okay? Why did you beguile me? Why did you trick me?" And of course, anyone of good reasoning ability would have felt every bit as badly as Jacob felt here. And this verse leaves much unsaid, much untold us as to what really happened. Where was Rachel while all this was going on? Had she been persuaded or commanded by her father to go along with this strategy? We know that her father bound to have had total command over this family. This was a time when the father would rule over those under his household, and technically Rachel still was under his household at this time. But did she go along with it because he commanded it, or was she forced to be detained in another part of the house while the events of the evening and long night transpired? We're not told here in this verse exactly what the situation was. But whatever happened, it must have been a most difficult night for Rachel. She must have been in real mental agony and torment as she imagine in her mind what was happening during the wedding night. And Leah was taking her place and deceiving Jacob all this time. This was probably the most unpleasant night of her whole lifetime before or after this event. But this also must have been a very difficult night for Leah. This was surely not the way she ideally wanted her wedding night to be. Though she earnestly wanted a husband, she was really due for a husband, being the older daughter. and she probably had a secret love for Jacob all along. She knew that he really loved Rachel, and that as he made love to her on their wedding night, he was really in his own heart making love to Rachel. He thought it was Rachel that he had and not Leah. He wasn't making love to Leah because he loved Leah, but because he loved Rachel. And the scripture doesn't tell us what feelings these two sisters had between themselves. We don't know what kind of conversation they might have had about this, what kind of arrangement there might have been. We're left to wonder about that. And it's quite likely that Leah was somewhat jealous of Rachel, but we have no reason to think that she would have wanted to hurt her sister like this, that she got any joy at all out of putting this kind of hurt on her sister. And she was, of course, being obedient to her father and going through with this deception. And so she had help to do this. It wasn't her own plan by herself. But she surely realized that it was wrong and cruel. There's no way she could have felt good about what happened on that night. And unless she wanted Jacob so badly herself that all of the considerations were forgotten, it must have been a very difficult night for her, just as it was for Leah. And of course, when Jacob learned what had happened, when he discovered the deception, it was very difficult for him. He could hardly fail to have been very angry and bitter and felt like he'd been wronged, both with Leah and Laban. And by the way, he might have been wondering just where is Rachel anyway. He could have been mad at the whole situation, very upset about it. And as he realized what had happened, though, he must have been struck by the fact that this situation was very similar to the deception that he himself had played on Isaac and Esau. Isaac had thought Esau was Jacob, and so gave him the blessing. And Isaac was deceived into thinking that. And of course, Jacob had the help of his mother in doing that. He had a parent that told him to do what he did. Now Jacob had thought Leah was Rachel and had taken her to wife. In both cases, the deception had been commanded by a parent, and in both cases, the purpose of the deception was to acquire something that was very desperately desired. Jacob had been sure the end justified the means in his case. He did get the blessing. He already had the birthright. This is really what God wanted. And perhaps Leah and Laban also felt the same way in their case, that Leah got what she wanted and the means justified the end. She may have felt that as the older daughter, she was justified in being allowed to marry first. And so as Jacob thought about this whole situation and he saw all the ramifications here and the similarities between his and Esau's case and Rachel and Leah's case, he may have then calmed down in his anger. He might have changed his view a little bit here and not been so hostile. He may have even recognized that his situation was really providential, that maybe in view of these remarkably similar circumstances, God had maybe had a hand in this. Accordingly, so far as the record goes, he did not have anger at Leah so that he expressed it openly. He did not run her down or use any bad language toward her or make her feel bad about this. And it's very possible that his experience with her during the night had even caused a close feeling for him to have for Leah, in spite of the fact that he was being deceived. And especially as he suddenly realized that she had herself been in love with him all along. At any rate, though he still wanted Rachel, he could not bring himself to hurt Leah anymore. We don't have any record of him hurting Leah as a result of this. So at the first opportunity, he confronted Laban with a demand for an explanation. And Laban gave him an answer. Verse 26 says, "And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." So his explanation was, and he no doubt had this well rehearsed, he knew how he was going to answer whenever Jacob came back to him. His answer was that the older sister must always be the first to be married. And then he proposed a new bargain for Jacob. If Jacob would fulfill Leah's wedding week, Laban would then give him Rachel also, provided Jacob would serve Laban another 7 years. So verse 27 says, "Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. Now, of course, this seemed like a very unreasonable proposition. Jacob could well have demanded Rachel without any further service, though whether he could have enforced such a demand is rather doubtful. He didn't really have any a way to bring any force on his part to force Laban to do anything. But out of respect to Leah, apparently, if Rachel was worth 7 years of service, was not Leah also worth 7 years of service too? This is maybe the way Jacob reasoned as he consented to do this. And so he fulfilled Leah's week. And then Laban finally gave Rachel to him. Verse 28 says, "And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her week. And he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also." So after he fulfilled the wedding week for Leah, Laban finally gave Rachel to him. Jacob was thus more or less forced to become a bigamist. In light of the times that this happened, this might not have been as serious a corruption of the marriage relation as it would be in the Christian dispensation. We're still talking about the patriarchal age now. This is before the law of Moses and certainly before the Christian dispensation. Polygamy had really become quite common. Jacob's own brother had two wives. His grandfather had taken Hagar as well as Sarah as his wife. Nevertheless, many problems did develop later in Jacob's home and family because of this. And thus, this shows again that monogamy is the better way. It's the way God originally intended. And when monogamy was cast aside for polygamy, there were problems. It was not God's way. Even today, although polygamy is illegal in many Western nations, you can't have two or three wives at the same time, we practice a serial type of polygamy, and this is because of the frequent divorces that are had. Although a person may not have several wives at one time, the person can have several wives if he takes them in a serial manner, and the same is true of a wife having many husbands or several husbands. But today, however, just as well as in Jacob's time, these multiple marriages normally involve much heartache and serious family problems. It is not God's way. It is not the way that it was ever intended to be. As a matter of fact, it is taught against in the New Testament today. In Romans 7, verses 2 and 3, we read, "For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is freed from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man." And again in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 10 and 11, "And unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband, but, and if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife." And certainly because this teaching that we read here in the New Testament is cast aside in our society today, we have untold heartaches, untold amount of stress and mental anguish on the part of parents, on the part of children, because of not following God's will in this matter of the husband and wife living together and not being parted and taking another companion. This is truly something that's guaranteed to bring problems. It will bring problems every time. And it's just simply because sin's at the root of it. Not following God's will is the problem here. And when we don't follow God's will, we are out of step with the harmony that we should have with the laws of the universe. The marriage tie between the man and the woman, between the husband and the wife, this monogamous relationship, is the basic unit of society. This marriage bond should be recognized. This integrity of the home and the family should be preserved. It is the way God intends for it to be. And anytime we go out of the bounds of what God intends, anytime we violate God's rule, God's principle here, we're going to pay a terrible price for it. This is a price that will leave a scar on the guilty as well as the innocent. There are many children who have been devastated by this wrecking of their home through divorce that bear the scar the rest of their lives. They may never divorce themselves, but they have an emotional problem here. They have an emotional disability, you might say, that stays with them from now on because of this terrible, terrible thing that happened to their family. So let's recognize God's laws and live according to God's laws about marriage. Well, we read then in verse 29 and 30, And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. So in verses 24 and 29, we read about the two maids that Laban gave Leah and Rachel, Zilpah and Bilhah, respectively. They, too, were destined to play an important role in Jacob's home and family life. They, too, would have children who would become a part of these 12 tribes of Israel. And Jacob did continue his service to Laban for an additional 7 years, on which he'd agreed to do. But he did not have to wait this full 7 years for Rachel. But as soon as he'd finished his week's festival with Leah at the original wedding, then he was allowed to go in to Rachel. And this is clear from verse 30, which indicates that he went into Rachel first, then served Laban another 7 years. We read there where it says, and he went also into Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. Rachel was his true love, of course, and he couldn't avoid showing this. Nevertheless, he did learn to love Leah also, even though he loved Rachel more than Leah. That's our lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.
Good news.
A long white robe in the heaven I know.
I got a long white robe in the heaven I know, and I don't want to be left behind.
Good news, chariots are coming,
and I don't want to be left behind.
I got a golden slipper in the heaven I know.
A golden slipper in the heaven I know.
I got a golden slipper in the heaven I know, and I don't want to be left behind.
Good news, chariots are coming,
and I don't want to be left behind.
I got a starry crown in the heaven I know.
A starry crown in the heaven I know.
I got a starry crown in the heaven I know, and I don't want to be left behind.
Good news, chariots are coming, and I don't want to be left behind.
And I don't want to be left behind.